AI and the future of support teams, three truly terrible predictions, some action items for support leaders, and Shauna explains the rule of 40. I'm Matt Patterson. This is The Supportive. A new customer support podcast right as AI is replacing us all? Really? I'm like a middle-aged dinosaur taking up jogging because that weird new light in the sky seems like a good omen. Is this all just a waste of time? Should we all go listen to the latest true crime podcast about the mysterious disappearance of normal-shaped genes? No. No, there is still plenty of life left in customer support as an industry and as a career. If you care about creating good customer experiences, then right now is the time to pay attention because things are about to get a bit weird. That uncertainty about the future is sort of new in the support world because the way we built customer support teams really didn't change a lot between about 1998 and 2020. Here's how it used to go down. Founders would start off using their shared Gmail inbox to do support until that got a bit messy. Then they'd get tired of people not reading the FAQs. They'd hire a first support person. That person would hire some more people. They'd all create better documentation, maybe add some support channels. They'd start creating support tiers. And sure, there was some variation for e-commerce stores, B2B, B2C companies, but that's basically the model that you'd use because it worked. But if you want to start an online support team today, well, then that model's looking a little bit dusty, like the Tamiya F14 that's still hanging from the ceiling of my old bedroom. Why? Because generative AI and large language models will change the way we structure support departments and how we staff them. If you're a customer-centric leader or you plan to be one, what do you do about that? What specifically is going to change? What should we do differently? Well, I can't see the future. I mean, if I could, I would never have bought that pizza with Bitcoin, would I? Still, I do want to give you some predictions, but before I do that, let me quickly lower those expectations with these three terrible predictions from history. Number three, in 1959, the US Postmaster General predicts mail will soon be delivered from New York to Australia by guided missiles. Number two, in 1966, John Fisher predicted that automation would mean we ran out of work for people to do and therefore moonlighting with a second job would soon be as socially unacceptable as bigamy.
The all-new wife swap.
And number one, Microsoft's Steve Ballmer predicted zero chance that the iPhone gained any significant market share. I tried to call him to verify that quote, but it turns out my Windows phone hasn't worked since 2017. Now, with that nice low bar for predictions to beat, what can we predict about the effect of AI on the way we build support teams from this year on? Well, here's the short answer. AI will be part of every decision. Whatever decisions you make as a leader, how many people to hire, how to set up reporting, which channels to support, how you manage your queue, there will be an AI angle to all of them. And the decision makers above you will want your opinions on all of that. And whether or not you see a role for AI in any particular area, you will need to have thought it through and have an informed perspective to share with them. So I'm going to give you four broad predictions. And number one, self-service will be central. This is the big change. More customers getting helped without having to talk to a person. Might be because they chatted with a bot, might be because they were sent to the right help doc automatically, or an automation answered their email before a human needed to. And the basic financial calculation of all support teams is, how many people do we need to serve a given number of customers? And AI really might be able to shift that ratio by helping more people without needing more staff. But that only works if the self-service experience is at least acceptable, and often today it's not, let alone with these unproven AI tools. So it's the teams who really nail that self-service interaction who figure out how to make it work and where to pop people out of a self-service process and into a human interaction. Those are the teams who will win in the long term. Prediction number two, lower cost per interaction means new support models. If we do see that shift of a big chunk of support requests going into AI-based self-service, that will mean some money saved. How much money? Well, that's not clear yet. The big AI models, they're all still fighting over owning the market. Whoever wins, the end-user pricing will change. But we know it's going to cost more than the customer just serving themselves with a knowledge base with no AI. And it will probably cost less than the hourly cost of a support team. How much less? Well, that's really going to depend on how the tools are implemented, how they're used. So why does that matter? Well, lower cost per interaction, that means you've got different scaling options. If your staff can now answer fewer of the basic questions, they've got some time left over. What do they spend that time on? What valuable service could you offer to customers that now might fit into your time and money budget? Start thinking about it now, otherwise all that lovely saved money, it'll just disappear into the budget of Brad from sales. Brad. Prediction number 3. Customer support QA will be transformed. Look, when someone on your team now makes a mistake, you can hold them accountable, but you can also support them, you can identify what went wrong, you can help them correct it. And they can feel bad about it, and they can want to do better. AI cannot feel bad, despite ChatGPT's obsession with apologizing to me for not being able to do anything. AI doesn't actually understand anything, and it can't be taught in the same way as a person. It'll make things up without any compunction. These are all solvable problems, or at least they're addressable problems. But maintaining that high quality of service when you're using AI, that will need a different approach than the one we're using today. We'll need people who understand how the AI is being trained, how the model can be tweaked, how we're going to monitor the output of AI. These will be new specialist skills and roles coming into customer support. Prediction number 4, support will be built on flexibility. And if you think, when I say flexibility, of the foul stench of gig economy contract worker abuse, well sniffed. I mean, that's definitely how that word is often used today. But I think there's a more positive alternative here. In a research study, AI-enhanced onboarding for new support agents got people up to speed much more quickly than the old ways did. Those AI suggestions can really cut down a lot of the figuring out where to even look for the answer time. And that might mean it's now more feasible to move people in and out of queues as needed. This is actually a success secret for Costco and some other retailers, cross-training staff on different jobs. So if there's a gap to cover, if there's a surge of customers or a surge of problems in a particular area, they can shift people around more easily. And in tech support, historically, that's been a lot harder to do because of the wider range of specialized knowledge that people need to operate in those different areas. But with AI help, we might see that skilled support people now can shift around internally to different products or different areas more often and more easily. And scaling up and down with the help of outsourcing teams like Boulder or Partner Hero might become more practical for smaller teams than it is today. So those are my 4 predictions on how AI will change the structure of support teams. Self-service will be central, lower cost per interaction, transformation of QA, more flexibility. So what? What do we do about that? How do we prepare our teams for those changes? How do we run our teams differently? What pieces should we start moving now? Well, before we get into that, let's just briefly visit with Shauna Fisher, my favourite chief financial officer, although to be fair, in a not hugely competitive field. Now, I have an IT degree, but that's not a business education. So when I started in a support leadership role, I really didn't know a lot about the mechanics of how businesses work, what all the acronyms meant, and more importantly, why they mattered to the business and why they should matter to me. And I suspect a lot of you listening probably have similar challenges. So I've asked HelpScout's CFO, Shauna, if she will give me some quick classes in remedial business metrics, and I'm going to include one of those lessons in each podcast, and that way you can learn too, and then we can all pretend that we always knew it next time we're in one of those meetings. We're going to talk today about the rule of 40, which, as I understand it, means that after the age of 40, you can't get up off any sofa without going,
It is very true in so many ways, but not quite the definition of this rule that we'll be talking about today. So the definition is pretty simple. It's the company's percentage of revenue growth plus its profit margin, and those two things added together should equal or exceed 40%. So when you break that down, what is revenue growth? I think of that as year-over-year growth of your monthly recurring revenue. And profit margin, I like to use EBITDA, which is your earnings before interest, tax, and amortization, which is a very financial acronym. But that is the profit margin. So if you add those two percentages together, that's what gets you to your rule of 40. You could have revenue growth at 100% year over year, and you could have a negative profit margin, and you add those two together, and that's okay. You get to 40. Another example is you could have much slower revenue growth. Maybe it's 40%, and all of your other costs are breaking even, so they equal zero. And that can get you to a rule of 40. So there's a lot of ways you can run your business and get to a healthy rule of 40. But there are definitely times in a company's journey where with intention, you might navigate away from that health metric. Maybe you're investing ahead of your growth and you know you have to invest a lot of money in certain investments in sales or marketing, and it's going to take a moment before you see that revenue mature. And so in those moments, you'll know your rule of 40 might get a little unhealthy, but you're doing that to invest in future growth.
And this is something that is specific to SaaS companies.
It definitely is. That sector of the industry tends to operate with really high profit margins that often range in the 70 to 90%. And so they definitely have been an indicator of product market fit. And there's really only certain stages of growth you really want to start focusing this. But the bigger you get, the more important it is.
How is it important to a customer service department within a SaaS company?
The rule of 40 is an overall health metric for the entire organization. So if you're a customer service leader, you might think, well, how can I impact that? But there's actually a lot of ways a customer service team can have a positive impact on the overall company's business health, because they have many levers that will help revenue growth, profitability, and customer satisfaction overall. Excellent customer service can attract great new customers, and they can also help retain existing customers. Oftentimes, the customer service team are the first interaction prospecting new customers might have with a product. So having a wonderful experience can really help them to make the decision to buy the product. And then during the use of the product, they're often the first line of defense for problems or questions that might come up. So making sure that customers get a great experience will help retain future customers. All of this impacts revenue, which is a big component of that formula.
I'm going to be in a meeting later in the week. They're going to be talking about Rule of 40. How am I going to sound like I know what I'm talking about?
So number one, just understand, first of all, what the formula is. Be thoughtful of others' perspectives. Like, what is the expectation from any external investors or board members that you might have? So really try to understand what is the expectation within your team of what the Rule of 40 should be. And also be aware of any market conditions that could impact your ability to grow and could be impacting your profitability. So really have just a high level understanding of how the formula works and how it's impacting your business and what are the expectations of your business for meeting this formula. Going in with that understanding will make you a great partner in any meeting.
Thank you, Shauna. All right, let's get back to how AI is changing the structure of support teams. What can you do as a support leader that will help your team make it through this AI upheaval and keep delivering great service? I'm just going to give you three action items because I know you love a listicle, even though you pretend that you only read the serious long articles. I mean, in the same way that I know which Hogwarts house your cat would be in.
Slytherin!
Action item number one, decide again what good service looks like for your team. AI is a method. It's not a feature. It's a way of delivering the type of customer experience that you want to deliver. So you need to know what that experience is. If you don't, you'll end up just delivering whatever mediocre default the AI gravitates towards. So sit down with your team, spend some time deciding on which customer experiences you want to create. How should it feel to be a customer of your business and to have a service interaction with you? Write it down and make it something that you can measure against so you know if you're doing it. Action item number two, stay informed about AI, the tools, and the capabilities. And look, if you're not super into tech for tech's sake, I understand it can be absolutely overwhelming to keep up with the change. But you do need to know what can be done with AI and what can't. If you don't, other people will decide for you how AI is going to affect your team and your customers. Look, there are smart, informed, empathetic people out there to follow in the field of AI, and we're going to put together a list of them for you soon, but here are two names you can start with, Ethan Mollick and Genevieve Bell, and I'll put some information about them in the notes. Action item number three, identify and prioritize key AI opportunities. Where are the spots in your service processes and customer interactions that AI could add the most value? You need to know the answer to this question. Some of your competitors will figure it out for themselves. Other people in your business will want the answer too. Maybe it's in tagging and reporting to understand your customers better. Maybe it's helping people find the right knowledge base articles. Maybe it's onboarding new team members. Maybe it's scaling up your QA. Sit down, make a list, put it in order, and then keep your eyes open for possible solutions. All right, so your takeaways today. You're going to define good service for your team. You'll keep up with AI news. You'll make a list of where you can best use it. And that's enough to be getting on with, I think. In the show notes, you will find all of those items listed. You'll find the transcript, my article on this topic, and a place to share your comments or questions. And I would love to hear from you. But let me leave you with this thought. AI change is coming, and you don't want to be the last of the dinosaurs. You want to be the first of the mammals, creeping out into a new world as the dust starts to settle. I'm Matt Patterson. This has been The Supportive. Stick around, hear about the sponsor of the episode, and I'll see you right here next time. This episode is sponsored by DeepaCifi, the only AI tool that automatically rephrases passive-aggressive customer service responses before your customer sees them. Oh, it must be DePacify. That makes more sense. This is like Zapier Zapier all over again. Anyway, so let's say your team member is responding to a customer, and the sort of customer who clearly hasn't read the previous support response, the one that explicitly answered their question. And your staff member might type something like, "Per my previous email, this is actually expected behavior." But not with DePacify. With DePacify installed, that sentence is instantly and automatically rephrased to, "I already answered this last time. Try reading the email before replying." Is that? Maybe I've got the... Oh, hold on a sec. Okay, no. No, Kelly's telling me that that's what DePacify does. It removes the passive, makes things just purely aggressive. It says here they've got $35 million in venture funding. Yeah. Well, look, I guess they've already paid for this spot, so it's not really my problem. Okay, let's just do it. Go to depacify.email and enter the code SUPPORTIVE for 10% off your first aggro pack. Kelly, we have got to vet these sponsors better before we record, I mean. How much are they even paying for this?